You're listening to a recording from the Open Society Institute, working to build vibrant and tolerant democracies worldwide. Visit us at soros.org.
Greetings from the Open Society Institute, OSI. It's November 21st, 2008. I'm Bill Vandenberg, the director for the Democracy and Power Fund, a social justice funding program within OSI's U.S. programs. The Democracy and Power Fund identifies, supports, and seeks to lift up some of the United States' most dynamic, innovative, and high-impact organizations that conduct community organizing and nonpartisan voter engagement, develop new leaders, generate policy solutions to our nation's challenges, and build power for those who don't currently have it in their communities or our country. You may definitely learn more about us online at www.soros.org. We want to thank you for joining us for this OSI forum, where we'll take a deeper look at the 2008 elections, some key lessons learned, and what to look forward to. It's our goal today to cover some new ground that you haven't already heard about from the talking heads on TV. And I don't need to go into the history-making nature of this election. That story has been well told. We also don't likely need to share the anticipation that many feel for this new chapter in America's history as we watch a new president and his transition team move forward. What we will talk about today is that many people noted that there's something different about this year's elections, not simply referring to the backgrounds of the candidates. There's a new energy, a rarely seen excitement, and much talk of a transformative political moment. Sure, we're coming out of a particularly low point for progressive policies over the last several years, we'll say, but there's something else. The nature of this campaign, how people were engaged, and the unprecedented engagement of many communities, that is something that we'll take a look at today. So that is what we'll be discussing for the next few minutes. And I'm very thankful to have two excellent guests, both of whom represent organizations that the Open Society Institute supports, and both are organizations and leaders that we recognize for their innovative and effective work. Their bios are online at soros.org, so you can learn much more about them there. But I'd like to welcome Judith Freeman from the New Organizing Institute. And Judith is the co-founder and executive director of the New Organizing Institute, which is a training, research, and development organization for technology-enabled organizers, activists, staff, and leaders. And most recently, she was on leave from NOI to work for one of the campaigns this year, and she has many observations that she can share with us from that experience. So first, welcome, Judith.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Thank you. Our second guest is Jorge Mursuli, and Jorge is the president and CEO of Democracia USA. And Jorge has a long history of work for civil and human rights, working with People for the American Way, and with Save Dade County, and many other issues in South Florida and across the country. Jorge has also worked on free speech and election protection issues, and in the 4 years that he has been at the helm of Democracia USA, the program has grown to become one of the most effective Latino and Latina civic engagement, voter empowerment, and leadership training programs in the nation. It's based at the National Council of La Raza, and as I said before, Jorge serves as its president and CEO. So welcome, Jorge.
Thank you so much for having me. It's great to be here.
So folks, why don't we start briefly, if you could, with a description of what your organizations did over these last few months. What was the role of the New Organizing Institute and Democracia USA with regard to nonpartisan civic engagement in this election?
Sure. So the New Organizing Institute, over the 6 months before the election, went around the country and did a series of trainings for nonprofit organizations and the types of work that they could do to get engaged in the election. So we taught people how to use technology for voter registration, how to do better blog outreach to get their message out there about the issues that they're concerned about for the election, and generally how to use the new media and the new technologies that are available for all organizations to participate in the elections more fully and to get their issues in the election dialogue for 2008. So we did a series of these trainings as well as provided support for organizations who had questions about how to use some of these new technologies and techniques for their organization.
Thank you. Jorge?
Democracia, as you said, has been around since 2004. This year we had field operations in Florida, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, Arizona, Nevada, Colorado, and we did voter registration. We did get out the vote. We in Colorado, which is our newest of the operations, developed our leadership team that we have in the other operations. And so we not only, you know, generated about 140,000 registrations, but also were very strategic about how we impacted the Electoral College on this election. So, you know, we use voter registration and get out the vote to sort of develop folks, you know, people who've never been involved in the electoral process before, who basically never really knew how, you know, what a registration was, let alone how to register. And now are ready in 09 to put some of the best performers in a leadership academy and have them sort of lead us on issues around the environment and healthcare and immigration reform and redistricting, census, et cetera. So it was a good year.
Yeah, I love how casually you mentioned that your organization registered 140,000 new voters. That's large and very impressive. So thank you both. We're excited to have you here. So Judith, there's been a lot of discussion of the technological innovations in this year's elections and this year's campaigns. There's been some estimates that there are over 10 million email addresses that have been collected by the Obama campaign, millions by the McCain campaign. There were over 3 million donors online through one of the campaigns and several hundred thousand active volunteers. Certainly, volunteers have always been part of campaigns, but what was unique about this year's campaigns and elections? And what are some specific pieces that organizations listening to this podcast can take with them to infuse their work with some new energy and be more effective in achieving their missions moving forward?
Sure. I mean, I think it was an extraordinary year for the way that we were able to use technology and combine that with all of the amazing work that was going on the ground. So being able to bring people in through just by going to a website and typing in their email address of one of the campaign's website, and then having those people immediately go and be connected with the people that are doing the field work on the ground. So, you know, this is really an amazing, new way for people to get engaged in a campaign, as simple as typing in their email address on the page and then getting a phone call the next day. Another thing was YouTube. In 2004, YouTube didn't exist, and it really changed the way that the campaign was able to campaigns were able to get information out to people, as well as the way that other people were able to create their own videos. So, you know, in 2004, YouTube didn't exist. And in 2008, the Obama campaign created nearly 2,000 videos on their site. And, you know, it was used by the campaign to inspire people, to share stories, to recruit volunteers. And it was often picked up by many of these videos are picked up by the mainstream media, which is something we can talk about later, which I think is a good way for organizations to use this new medium. And so when other people created these videos, they got more invested in the campaign. And the whole campaign was really focused on bringing more and more people into the process and making this possible. And so I think the second thing is the super volunteers. So bringing more people into the process was an amazing part of what the campaigns achieved this cycle. And some of it was as easy as getting people's email addresses. But then the campaign really did something amazing with these super volunteers that they brought into the process. The campaign mantra of respect, empower, include really manifested itself in the campaign's efforts to give staff and to give these super volunteers, on the Obama side, they called them neighborhood team leaders, to give them more and more control and more leadership. So when these super volunteers and these staff leaders were given more and more responsibility, they really became more invested in it. And we used all of the technology to track all the work that they were doing and all the, you know, these great, both the top-down, well-managed campaign, but also bringing in new grassroots activists into the process. So those are a couple of things that I think that worked really well, combined both solid field organizing with new media and new technology. So for takeaways for organizations, I think that, you know, using new media such as YouTube as a way to get more earned media, you know, if you create a funny video about your organization, it might be more effective than just releasing a press release about an issue that you've been working on. So that's one way that we can use this new media. Also, I think it's really important, you know, we come away from these really big elections, and it's really important to set the goals for your organization for new media and technology that fit the organization. So, you know, if one of these national campaigns got over 10 million email addresses, well, that's probably not the reality for most smaller organizations.
You don't think so?
Well, maybe not. I don't know. But there's still a ton that can be done by building an email list, building a solid email list, coming up with a new media strategy, talking to the blogs. So just figuring out like what makes sense for your organization is really key to being able to use it effectively. And then finally, I would say one of the most effective ways they used sort of the super volunteers is that they had a simple mailing list where if someone was really excited and they wanted to do more than get an email every once in a while and click on it, that you could give them special assignments. And so you could manage this through mailing lists. So this would be something your organization could do, either having people write letters to the editor or asking them to do special assignments, going to visit legislators in their district and stuff like that. And so if you really wanted to let people do their own organizing, giving them a little bit of control over a mailing list for your organization is one way to do that.
Terrific. So, thank you. That's really it's a great way to dissect some of the lessons learned and to apply to organizations that may be listening to this podcast. So thank you. Jorge, the story of Latino community participation in this election was also a very compelling one. It started out somewhat dicey with polling that was talking about a racial divide that existed with the Latino community and the African-American community. Many politicians in recent years have scapegoated the Latino community over the issue of immigration reform and immigrant justice efforts. And that's a key priority for us here at OSI. So the evolution of kind of being a scapegoat to political empowerment is a pretty interesting one. And we won't say that in the last few months we have gotten rid of the scapegoating and now it's all about empowerment. But what did you notice this year? And your participation, your organization's participation, what did you notice on the ground in communities around the country?
Well, you know, I think that one of the principal reasons why I think Latinos really turned out to the polls this year is that, you know, when the immigration issue was a policy discussion, for the most part, it was inside baseball. I think most Hispanics around the country, you know, just didn't really know enough about policy A versus policy B. But what wind up happening is the policy discussion turned into a sort of vitriolic rant, and in many corners, it was anti-immigrant, and that really was mostly anti-Latino. And I think that whether you were a U.S. citizen or a resident or undocumented, I think you realized, oh my God, you know, there are people in this country who don't think I belong here. And that reality, I think, was one of the factors that really, you know, mobilized Latinos around the country, no matter where they were. I mean, what you saw was not only in the major markets, but you saw all over the country a real turnout issue. And I think that was an issue. I mean, I think they certainly, you know, saw the candidates as interesting, and, you know, that always mobilizes people, no matter what your ethnicity is. But the immigration issue, certainly people kept that in mind and voted their conscience around that. So I think that was probably the principal, or one of the principal issues in this cycle.
You know, another thing that many have noted is this changing electoral map, and the traditional view of Latino concentrations of population has been, you know, it's New York, New Jersey, it's Chicago, and then it's the Southwest and Florida. But you really saw a very different map emerge over these last few months, did you not? And what do you think that means as we look forward at this point?
Well, I mean, I think, first of all, the first lesson in this election cycle was that that this sort of swing vote concept within Latinos is real, and that I think that if I was an elected official, if I was moving a particular issue, what I would realize is that you can't really ignore Hispanics and Latinos around the country, and that in fact, with a bit of investment and a bit of attention, I think that they are in fact very much engaged. We saw that there's a new map. People are referring to the New West, which is really about Nevada, Colorado, New Mexico, and to some degree Arizona. As the sort of the game changers, the fact that these states not only can swing in different directions, but that the Latino vote within these states can, and in this particular case, did affect the end result in a big way. And then, of course, you have Florida, which, anyway, slice it, given the electoral votes that it has, is a game changer. So now you have not only do you have L.A. and Miami in and of itself, and New York and Chicago, you now have this other sort of very, very significant voting block in those four states. But that story was one that people expected, and in fact, it is now a reality that the map has changed. What people didn't expect, I think, is the fact that that not only was there a turnout issue in existing markets and even in battleground states. The truth being is that the real story is that Latinos showed up everywhere. I think you have seven. What you're seeing all over the country is Latinos coming to the polls. Washington State had 7% of its electorate was Latino. Wyoming. I didn't know there were any Latinos in Wyoming, quite frankly. But 5% of the electorate. 5% of the electorate is Latino. Delaware. When you go on, Utah, 5%. So what we're really seeing is not only an increase in the voter turnout, but a disbursement of the population that I think gives us reason to think about how we reach out to Latinos, how we deal with the Latino vote in very different ways, I think, than we've ever sort of thought about it before.
What might be some of those ways?
Well, I mean, I think that it's really... that's a good question. I think that, it's probably unrealistic to think that we can create operations and structures in all of these communities around the country because the truth of the matter is that this population is increasing everywhere. But I think that one of those ways is that we have to figure out a way to connect them, to network them, to if you are... Latino organizer, or if you're someone that really believes that your particular community in Washington or in Utah or in Delaware or in Tennessee, that you need to organize around a particular issue, that you have access. I mean, I think one of the things Judah talked about is, the sort of the online potential. And that may be one of those things that we have to sort of figure out. How is it that we really can give some substantial support to these organizations via online. The other thing is electeds. If you're a council person in some city in Wyoming, and you would really love to help this new emerging population in your community, but the majority of folks are at the very least concerned about the growth or the change in demographics in your area, how do you how do you sustain, how do you support that without having that be an electoral death for you? You know, how do you live? How do you get information that supports your train of thought, your ideology, your moral standards around these issues? How do you do that? And I think that that's the other thing we have to sort of focus on, is not only supporting our folks in those communities, but supporting the elected that may not be Latino, but who are being impacted by these changes and are not quite sure what to do about it.
Thank you. Judith, that brings up an interesting question. For many years, been a conversation about the digital divide and access to technology for lower-income communities and or people of color communities. But that digital divide shrinks as folks get younger and generations, and the millennial generation in particular is the most multiracial generation in our nation's history, the most technologically adept generation in our nation's history. With the New Organizing Institute and what you've observed around the country in recent months, what do you see as the potential for integration of new technology and new organizing strategies and people of color communities as we look forward?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's a really, it's a great question. It's a really exciting time because I think even though the campaigns did a lot of work to, you know, both on their text list as well as trying to understand, you know, well, which communities to reach out through different lifestyle online programs. I think that there's still a lot of work to be done to understand, like, who is actually going to be able to be engaged through these different mediums. So I think I think that is actually something that, you know, the campaigns just sort of scratched the surface of this time. And it'll be up to a lot of the organizations, I think, to figure out the innovations on those. Or, you know, we don't want to have to wait till 2012 to figure out, like, what's actually going to work for a lot of these populations. So I think the innovations and testing that some of the organizations are really interested in doing, I think is really going to give us a lot of insight into the best way to use these. I mean, I think it's sort of amazing. I think of the 18 to 29 year olds, I think that, I mean, if I remember the statistics correctly, well, they definitely got more of their news from the internet and from text messaging than any other news source. And so a lot of the information that they're getting is from all these new mediums. So it'll be interesting to see how we can all use that information going forward.
Thank you. Well, folks, we're going to be wrapping up in a couple of minutes, but I wanted to give you a last quick question to share your thoughts with us on. And that is, as we look forward, what are you most excited about? Whether it's a particular issue that could be advanced in this new political moment, or if it's an advance in how organizations operate so that they could be more effective in achieving their missions, what's inspiring you at this time? Judith, do you want to start?
Sure. I think right now, I think that people sort of seeing the importance of empowering people at the local level, and you know the team structures that came up around some of this electoral organizing really showed, I think, demonstrated to a lot of organizations what it means to do this new type of organizing where you're creating these local teams and empowering them, but you're giving them the tools, both the technology tools and the resources that they need to do a lot of their own local organizing. So I think this at this moment, the combination of like the technology, like the top-down organizing with the grassroots local community organizing, I think is the most exciting thing to me, and to see what kind of power is going to emerge from the combination of those two things.
Terrific. Thank you. Jorge, what do you think?
You know, I mean, to me, it's the changing landscape. It's the fact that Latinos around the country are not only interested in the opportunities as a new sort of growing demographic, they actually are interested in being Americans. I mean, they really are interested in what that means. They are wanting to figure out how to participate. They recognize that in order to be respected and to garner some sort of influence in the political system, and also to protect their culture, that they have to not only have a sense for their homeland country, but they also have to have a sense for how things function here. You know, how is it that this thing works here in this country, and how is it that I can participate? And the fact that, you know, we saw these numbers in such a significant at such a significant level, I think tells me that they're interested and that they want to learn more and that they want to be a bigger part of it. And so that opens, that opens all sorts of opportunities around all sorts of issues and sort of expands the docket, if you will, of all the issues we can work on. So it's an exciting time, and I'm excited about being part of that.
Thank you. And if folks would like to learn more about your organizations, we will have information on the Open Society Institute website at www.soros.org. But if people want to reach you directly, your websites, the New Organizing Institute is at www.neworganizing.com. And Democracia USA is www.democraciausa.org. Well, I want to thank you, Judith and Jorge, Judith Freeman from the New Organizing Institute and Jorge Morsulli from Democracia USA, for joining us today and for sharing your successes, your analysis, and your hopes for the future. I want to give special thanks, too, to my colleague Rachel Pecker from OSI's Democracy and Power Fund for her work to make this podcast happen. And until next time, to our listeners, thank you for being here with us. This is Bill Vandenberg with the Open Society Institute's Democracy and Power Fund, signing off. Thank you.